Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to The Naked Truth, hosted by me, Lori Corrigan, and sponsored by Snake Charmer Men's Body Waxing. This show is all about nakedness, spiritual, emotional, mental, where I pay tribute to the valuable contributions you gentlemen make both personally and professionally. It's a safe zone for you guys to speak your minds amidst this current social climate where you struggle to be heard. Today is one of those hard-hitting shows that we take a breath and then it compels us to re-examine how we're living our own lives. What does it mean to win at life? Ask 10 different people and you'll get 10 different answers. And then there's the guest today sitting across from me with a big grin on his face, Chuck Keels, a stage 4 prostate cancer survivor who has a very unique perspective of what it means. Since his miraculous healing in 2015, Chuck's life focus has been to give others hope and inspiration. His book entitled, Hi, I'm Chuck, which chronicles his journey back from the fatal diagnosis, not only speaks to cancer patients, but also anyone who struggles with life challenges, which is everyone. Welcome, Chuck. At the time of your diagnosis, life was full with a career in landscape and pool design, as well as being a single dad for your boys, Chucky and Dante. Then everything spun out of control with the diagnosis of stage 4 prostate cancer. Illness can so easily go undiagnosed until later stage because we so easily subconsciously adapt to the signs. What was that reason that brought you to the doctor's office that day?
Wow. I would say it was, I was forced to the doctor's office because I suffer something that I call male mentality. I'll be okay tomorrow. Whatever it is, it's going to go away. And so for actually a couple months, I managed a headache and some aches and pains in my body, my back, with aspirin, and it was okay. And in that time, I was still an active guy, not only working and designing swimming pools and landscaping in Gilbert, Arizona, but also going to the gym with my boys. I hiked Camelback Mountain 4 weeks before all this came down.
Wow.
So I was absolutely pinned into the corner to a Friday that I couldn't hardly carry my briefcase into work. And that evening, took my boys downtown Gilbert to some food trucks. And when we got home, the pain was starting to shoot through the top of my head. And I knew it was beyond, you know, I should have done something before this. So when they went to bed, I went to Gilbert Mercy Hospital and just drugged myself inside and said, something's terribly, terribly wrong. And they started running scans. And the fastest scan result that comes back is an x-ray. And the emergency room doctor said, you have 2 fractured vertebrae in your back. So as you can imagine, I said, how did it happen? I haven't fallen. And, you know, I mean, what's causing this? Who walks around with a broken back, right? And so throughout that night, I was making phone calls to my family in Ohio and to my fiance in California. And it was the middle of the night, so I didn't hear back from anybody. And I had an emergency room doctor come in, close the door, and look at me and said, Chuck, I've got bad news. It's all cancer related.
And it had weakened your bones that you didn't even realize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a process called metastasism. Mm-hmm. And metastasism is when the cancer, if it started in the bones, usually it doesn't, it goes to where it's fed. And mine actually went into the lymph nodes in the bone marrow, which carried it around my body. Well, with cancer in the bone marrow going, you know, causing havoc, the bone itself starts to soften, damage, become brittle, and that process is called metastasism. And so the aches and pains that I was having in my body, that was the reason why. If you speak to anybody about any type of cancer, when it gets into different parts of the body is when it goes from stage one to stage two to stage three, and unfortunately to stage four. The reason why this story is just absolutely beautiful, crazy, scary, is because there's not a lot of us stage four people walking around this planet any longer. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with cancer.
The date?
May 20th,
2015. Okay.
Cancer specialists were brought into the hospital to do some in-depth testing to tell me more about the cancer.
They didn't let you leave that day.
I left the next day. After the tests were done, the biopsies, this might sound a little crazy, but you become a test puppy, mm-hmm. and you expect it. You're just getting poked and just blood tests and just scans and everything you can imagine. And out of all that stuff, the thing that I remember probably the clearest is when they do a test of the bone marrow. They come into the room, they numb up the area. So mine was my hip. They pull out a drill. It looks like something they got from Home Depot. And they actually drill into your bone marrow in your hip. And you're sitting there awake watching this like, you have got to be kidding me. You can feel the pressure and you can hear this drill. And it's trying to get in through the skin, through the tissue, and through the bone, and then into actually the bone marrow itself so that they can get a sample. So Then I was allowed to go home. And my fiance flew in from California as soon as she works over there. So as soon as she got my message, she said, I'm on the way. She came in, sat next to my hospital bed. We were allowed to go home. We were there for a couple of days. We knew it was cancer. Her sister's a cancer nurse in Texas. We were sending my paperwork all over the place trying to see if anybody could give us some insight, because one of the things that happens when someone is diagnosed with cancer is them, their loved ones, their family, their friends are all confused. Mm-hmm. Nobody plans for something like this. And it's a very testing time because it's a very confusing time. And usually it's go home until the test results come back. And then they're numb for a week or 2 weeks, and I've seen it up to 3 weeks. And then they get their test results. So with me, it was 3 days. Went back and was taken into a room. And the cancer specialist closed the door and he said, there's no way to candy coat this. There's so much cancer throughout your body that we can't even find the origination. We don't know where it started. We don't know what kind of cancer to name it. We just know that your body's saturated with cancer. I don't know about you, Lori, In my past, if a relative or a friend had cancer in more than one place in their body, two places, maybe three places, mm-hmm. I knew it was not good. It was not good. And I was saturated with cancer. And the test that came back said that there was cancer in 90% of the bones in my body.
And you were feeling what at that point? Not mentally, but physically. What was keeping you moving?
Just, I was drained. I was, my energy levels were terrible. My muscle on my body was starting to melt away or atrophy. It was more at that time also was, you know, the confusion of what's going on with my body. They're talking cancer. So what does it mean? What kind of cancer? How bad is the cancer? All these things are going through my head. And then the news came down from the cancer doctor, Chuck. There's nothing we can do at this point. It's way out of control.
Have the specialists seen anything like your situation?
Yes. And at that point, they send you home, and hospice shows up at your house.
Okay.
They sent me home, and hospice showed up at my house. They said, "Go home and be with your family. You're at stage four, and you got about 3 months to live." So as you can imagine, I had to go home and sit my two high school boys down. They already knew I was sick. I mean, my 15-year-old, I had to get to the point where my back was hurting so bad that I had some mornings where I asked him to tie my shoes. I mean, you could have cut the air. It was so heavy that morning, and I had tears in my eyes. He had tears in his eyes. Tie my shoes, help me stand up and and jump in the car and take him to school. So the process that you go through when you're diagnosed with cancer, when you're going through this, it's devastating. And as soon as people started catching wind of it through maybe a post on the internet, social media that said, I hope you're sitting down for this one because this is not anything we ever would plan for. And the friends started calling and showing up. Well, with the diagnosis of stage 4 and 3 months to live, what happened was I said, what do you do with 3 months? And the only thing I could think of was, let's head back to Ohio so I can spend that time with my family, my mom and dad, and people I love. So we started in that process. We bought an airplane ticket. My fiance was going to go back to California because if she didn't, she was going to lose her job.
Oh, brother.
I was going to fly with my two boys back to Ohio. My sister-in-law's a doctor at Children's Hospital. Being a doctor means she's not into cancer and she doesn't work on adults, but she knows a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So the plan was to fly into Ohio, then rush me into the James Ohio State Cancer Clinic and see if they could do some more testing. In this time, I was down about 40 pounds. The muscles started just melting off my body. My body started shutting down. I don't want to get into that stuff too much, but there's going to be people listening and they understand that things that your body naturally does, mine no longer naturally was doing these things because parts of me were dying off.
Right.
So we planned a trip back to Ohio. Friends and neighbors and family and people that, you know, we love dearly were coming by to give me a big hug and say goodbye. And I said, hey, by the way, when you come by, take some furniture, take some stuff with you. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, if I've got 3 months to live and I'm going back to Ohio, I'm not trucking my stuff across the country. And what does all that stuff become when you have a life death situation? That stuff that you work your, you know, tail off to have that flat screen TV, that leather furniture, that beautiful, appliances in the kitchen, everything became stuff, just material stuff, you know. And I said, you know, take whatever you want. I had one friend show up with a moving truck, and a bunch of my boys and a bunch of neighbors helped him load up a bunch of stuff. And the reason why I told him, I said, if you don't come and take the stuff with you, it's going to be on the curb and anybody can take it at the end of the day on Saturday because Sunday morning I'm flying out of here. So at the time, you know, I can talk about this now because I can talk about this now. I'm here to talk
about this now.
Yeah. But at the time you would never think that these things were lessons or even blessings. But now that I'm here looking back, the lessons that I went through were absolutely life-changing. So we emptied out a house. The kids stayed with a cousin in Gilbert, and me and my fiance stayed in Phoenix at the Hilton at Tapatio Cliffs just to spend an evening together and have dinner and talk.
Very nice. Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I got up and went down the hall, headed towards the bathroom, and I heard a pop, and I ended up on the floor. And I'm still kind of silly. I'm an old farm boy from Ohio. So I've been through a lot of situations in my life where there was an injury, something painful, you know, you just walk right through it. I hit the floor. I reached up and got the door handle for the bathroom and pulled myself up. I got the top of the door and I was standing there. And my fiance calls 911 and she's standing behind me, actually with her arms around me, holding me up. The fire department get there. She hands them my scans and says he's got cancer and something popped in his back. Took 8 firefighters to get me down off the door. Every movement, every budge, and every breath was excruciating. And like I said, I prided myself for being a tough old farm boy from Ohio. This was absolutely unbelievable. And the only way to describe it is someone stabbed me in the back with a knife and then was running it up the back of my head. Mm. And every time I breathed, every time they budged me, and they had to get me from a resort in the mountains up the Hilton, down some steps into an ambulance. The ambulance had to drive out of this little mountainy area. The closest hospital was John C. Lincoln Hospital, which is, here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And that's where they pulled in. And they roll me in. And they tell the emergency room doctor he has cancer and something popped in his back. So they're starting to run their own scans. And the first thing she says to me is, "You're not going to Ohio today or anytime soon. You just suffered what we call a compression fracture." So remember when they said that I had two fractures in my back? The back was the most damaged area through this metastasism or softening or damage of the bone. And one of the discs in my back just got to the point where it said, "That's it, I'm done. I can't hold you up anymore." And it collapsed into nerve endings, ligaments. And that's why every budge, the pain was just excruciating. So they started running their own tests. And over the next couple of days, I started getting information. The first thing after you've suffered a compression fracture or a broken back, the next thing was it was prostate cancer. It started in your prostate, and then it started going to where it's fed, and it moved throughout your body through your lymph nodes and your bone marrow. So when I'm talking to a cancer group, a business group, whoever I'm talking to, I tell them, you get to your late 40s, early 50s, you go to get a test. Prostate cancer is going to hit 99% of the men in this world. And a lot of times it's when we're 70, 80 years old and it's you don't even know about it, but it's that prominent. So I'm an advocate at getting tested, catching it at early phases. If you catch prostate cancer at an early phase, it's fixable. If you wait until it gets to stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, if you talk to people out there, it takes a lot of lives.
So to be clear to everyone out there listening, you're saying 100% be preventative and get it when you don't have any symptoms, because by the time you have any kind of symptom, it's often too late.
It's often too late. Right. I don't know how many friends I've had that said, "I went in for a cough. I went in for a sore back. I went in for different things," and I came out of there with a diagnosis of stage 3 cancer. It's insane. So, it's just something that's got to be checked out, just like everything else we do as we age. It's got to be something that's got to be tested for. And they got to look at something called your PSA that detects if your prostate is fighting and regulating and changing and going through some type of a fight.
Oh.
And then they can say, "Hey, your PSA level is 1, 2, if it gets to 3 or 4, you definitely have something. Mm-hmm. But if it's 0.5, 1, 2, 3, or 4, then it's something's going on in your body." Okay. So when I was diagnosed and they ran the tests at John C. Lincoln Hospital, as crazy as it sounds saying 1, 2, 3, or 4, my PSA levels were 200.
Oh. My gosh. How do you even comprehend that?
You don't. I was checking out. I was in the process. I was dying. For my body to break down that bad and to go through what I was going through, I was definitely checking out.
Can you speak directly to those men who still will say, even listening to you and the rest of what you have to say, "Nah, they're going to do what you did.
Oh,
I'll
absolutely
be better tomorrow." Or, "I don't even know what's going on. It's going to be fine until I get around to it."
Absolutely.
Talk to those guys directly. Give them a couple of lines right now that says, "You're wrong and here's why."
Well, it's not only "you're wrong and here's why," but I'm in the process now where I work with cancer people every day. I don't know how many men I've talked to who said, "I was that tough, like Chuck. I was that tough guy that just didn't go to the doctor. Something was wrong. I would keep putting it off and saying, 'Hey, I'll be okay tomorrow.'" I'll tell you when the eyes are opened and all of a sudden you're not that tough dude that, you think you are in your brain that maybe you might've been when you were 25 and we're 45, 50, 55, 60. That all goes away when you're sitting in a doctor's office and they tell you that you have 3 months to live. When you're diagnosed with something, and it might not even be cancer, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of disease and infection in this world. But when there's a diagnosis that comes down, everything changes. everything changes. You know, I tell my story to a lot of people, and I'll get into the story a little bit more, but I constantly, you know, say, well, you know, were you religious? You know, because I talk about my, you know, spiritual walk. And they said, and I say it's a spiritual walk. I don't like the word religion. I think humans messed up religion. I think that, you know, that all these things, oh no, you've got to dress a certain way and you've got to sit in a building on Sunday and you've got to do these things to be a good person. And then I seen these guys during the week kicking their wife's butt or, you know, out drunk. And, you know, I've seen some crazy things in my life, and it got back to the point where I don't believe in religion. I believe in spirituality. And so in my journey and what I just went through with this cancer, when you don't know, or when I should say, when you do know that we are not in control, is when you're diagnosed with something, you know, that's terminal, and you're looking around and you're like, you know, I mean, hey, if it was fixable and money could do that, then, you know, Steve Jobs would still be here.
Right. And there's that saying, if only I XYZ.
Yep.
So here you are at the end.
Yep.
Have you ever, I'm interrupting my own question here. Have you met anyone in your travels, specifically sought out anyone who exactly beat the Grim Reaper like you did? How many are there, and have you met any?
I've met some. There's not a lot. I've met some stage 3 and stage 4 people in different types of cancer, women with breast cancer, men with different types of cancer. There's not a lot. When I hear the story, it's big hugs. It's a lot of tears. You know, the thing about this whole journey that it just hammered home to me and that I talk about every day now is that breath that you just took is an absolute blessing. It's not something that we you know, earned. It's a blessing. And what that means is living in the moment, living for what's right now. I've had friends that, you know, had beautiful, successful businesses, beautiful homes, beautiful automobiles, and sitting next to them watching their kids at a sporting event and saying, you know what, I've missed half of my kids' life. I wish I would have been around more while they were growing up, but I was so busy, you know, working. And at that point, I thought in my head, I don't ever want to say that. Mm-hmm. So I've made some amazing memories and had some beautiful events and stuff with my two boys who are 18 and 20 now. But living in the moment is what this all comes back to, because we plan for a vacation next year. We plan for one of the children to graduate high school or college. And you're looking ahead 2, 3, 4 years for these things. Mm. You don't plan to come home from the doctor and tell your kids that you just were diagnosed with cancer and you have 3 months to live. But if we can be a little more preventative, if we can be a little more open-minded, if you could listen to the people that love you around you and your wife and go get a checkup, it's huge. It's huge.
And if you don't have a gal around you, you just take on that responsibility yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then as much you know, I love what I'm doing now after my journey of working with cancer people. But I don't want the people listening to this show right now to be those people. You know, I don't want to be walking into your house or your hospital room or talking to you on the phone about, hey, you know, let's do some things, you know, proactive and try to fight through this. I don't want you to be some of those people. So, you know, like I said, there's not a lot of stage 3, stage 4 people walking around. When I hear the stories, I just love it. That's what gave me hope when I was going through my cancer. And, but that's a whole different discussion about, you know.
Well, let's go there. If you are comfortable with it, can you give an idea? You don't have to go into great detail, but people will want to know, how the hell are you sitting here right now?
Okay. So, I'm going through testing at the hospital and they're coming back with all this bad news. The testing was being done through the hospital, John C. Lincoln, and they brought a spinal surgeon in. They brought a cancer doctor in, the house doctor, the hospital administrator. They formed what I call my team. They formulated a team, and they started going over all these tests. And they came back, and my cancer doctor came in and said, you know, we have a plan. And I say, tell me about your plan, because the plan before was to just go home and be with my family and to get a visit from the hospice nurses.
Is this the same cancer specialist from the first visit?
No, different hospital.
So you're
I'm on the other side of town now.
You falling down and being in horrible pain
was a change of direction, change of plan.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, so the spine collapsed. I ended up at a different hospital and they said, we have a plan. And I said, okay, well, tell me about that plan. So it was a port is a medical device that goes in your chest and it carries chemo into an artery. And the reason why they put a port in your chest is because the type of chemo that I'm going to get is the chemical's just too strong. It'll burn the veins if they just did a regular IV. So it has to be plugged into this port in my chest and it goes into an artery and that's how you get the chemo. So we're going to do a port and we're also going to stop your testosterone production. And your testosterone is actually feeding the cancer right now. Mm. It's inflaming the cancer. So let me back a little bit up on that topic right there. If they catch prostate cancer at an early stage, they can give you a pill that stops your testosterone production. When the cancer's all gone and you're back to a normal life, you stop taking the pill and your testosterone comes back. Mine was so bad, I didn't get that option. They said, we're going to do a surgery and just stop the testosterone production. One of the things that I have to tell you about that no one would ever imagine is the medical people and the cancer people, what they're looking at is trying to extend your life. If they can give me another year or 2 years or even 3 years to my life based on what I'm going through right now, would that not be awesome?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So they're basing this on, we're trying to just save your life. So I never questioned a single thing they said. You know, okay, the port goes in tomorrow. I'm going to do two surgeries tomorrow. The port's gone in. The testosterone is going to be stopped. And then the next day, we're going to start chemo and try to kill this cancer running around your body. All right, let's go. It's a plan. I'm a little bit excited. Mm. As much as a sick guy like me could be.
Right.
They wheel me down to the surgery area to prep me. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the room. I remember the nurses' names. The doctors came out, come out and prep me and tell me what they were going to do. I went through the surgery. This process took about 4 hours. And I'm laying flat on my back in the recovery room. Same process. Nurses checking on you. Hey, you're going to go up and see your family here in a little bit. The doctors come over and they say, hey, everything went perfect, just exactly the way we talked about and planned. We'll see how this all goes. You're going to start chemotherapy tomorrow. And that's a whole different topic right there that we'll get into a little bit. So I'm laying on this gurney and I'm watching them getting other people ready for their surgeries. And when the question comes up to this absolutely ridiculous, horrible, scary cancer story and the turn of events, I'm laying flat on my back. I get a chill and it's not a normal chill. My first thought was somebody opened the door at the end of the room and the breeze was coming through. I scrunched up. And as I looked back, I was startled because somebody is actually standing in the room watching me. And as I turned a little bit more to see who it was, I can see Jesus standing right here.
Oh my goodness.
So here's Jesus in this dark brown robe, white scarf. I can see his beard and his face. And all I see him reach out, touch my shoulder. And in 2 to 3 seconds, he's gone. In the next few minutes, I'm laying there freaking out. The reason why, based on how sick I was, I said, he's coming to take me with him. I'm checking out. This is it. They wheel me upstairs. I tell my family what I seen, and they were all with tears in their eyes. This whole thing was already an emotional mess, the last few weeks of what we were going through. And I come through my surgery. And I look back and I see Jesus standing right there. Like I said, I don't consider myself any type of holy roller, but I do consider myself spiritual. And the feeling in my brain that I was in the presence of Jesus.
And you don't know for sure if you might have slipped into, I don't know the terminology, but into a place where Were they watching you? Was anyone watching you interact? Okay, so they were wondering what you were doing.
No, there was nobody right there. I mean, okay. there's nurses buzzing around because they're getting everybody ready for the surgery. There's nobody right there with me going, what are you looking at or anything like that.
Okay.
I just looked back. He was standing there after I got this chill and he touched my shoulder and he was gone. And so I didn't know what it meant. Like I said, told my family, everybody's just in tears. The very next morning, if you've been in a hospital before, God bless you. It sucks. Mm-hmm. It's never good. There's bells and whistles and lights and nurses and people taking your temperature and people checking your, you know, heart rate and the machines and stuff all night long. You never get an hour or two of sleep. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, but you're in good care. You know, you're in good care. So I'm in this hospital and at 6 o'clock, the door opens, the lights comes on, two nurses come in. Hey, good morning, Chuck. Time for your drugs. So they're cleaning me up and getting me ready. And they give me, okay, here's your steroids for shrinking some of the cancer tumors that are in your chest cavity. Because there was cancer all over my body. Here's your bone strengtheners. And now here's your pain meds. And before we can give you pain meds, we have to ask you, pain meds are as needed. So on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, how bad your pain right now? I've already been fitted for a big plastic back brace that I Velcro and tighten up, and I have to do that. My doctor said it's the rules. You're not allowed to try to sit up until you've got this thing fastened on tight. So I fasten on tight. I sit up. I look at the nurses, and I'm like, I don't feel any pain.
Oh, my gosh. No.
To get into it a little bit more, the cancer clinics and stuff that I'm around now, the cancer patients that I'm around now, the amount of pain meds that circulate through these places are off the hook. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely ridiculous. I look at my nurses and I say, I don't feel any pain. And they go, well, you just had surgery yesterday. It's going to start up. So when it does, here's the nurse button, push it and call us and we'll rush in and try to stay ahead of it because we don't want it to get crazy before we can, you know, give you your pain meds and calm it back down. From that day in 2015 till this moment right now, talking to you, Lori, I never touched another pain med, not even aspirin. I had a mound of pain meds on my counter at home from hospice, from the hospital. I mean, it was, I'm talking liquid morphine that will numb you up. Mm. You don't even know who you are. I took two grocery bags full of pain meds to the fire department in Gilbert, Arizona for them to dispose of for me because I didn't need them. I never used them. They piled up. The pain stopped and I was at the John C. Lincoln Hospital for 10 days. They got me ready to be moved to the next place. The next place was the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale. So I was there for 5 weeks. So you've got the Mayo Clinic Hospital. You've got a lodge behind that called Hope Lodge. And then the next building is Hospice. So I guess Hope Lodge is kind of between the two,
man.
Right?
It's an interesting combination.
Yeah. So this is where I'm put in Hope Lodge in the cancer wing with all families. I met some absolutely beautiful people. Talked about, you know, we have, you know, our lunches and our dinners and stuff, talking about what, you know, our lives and where they're from all over the country. And that next year, I lost a lot of friends. Oh. I lost a lot of beautiful people. Because now I'm actually in the cancer world. And that's, unless you're a doctor, a cancer doctor, or an hospice nurse, you never imagine being around death at this rate. And now I'm in the cancer world, and I'm losing friends. And it's blowing my mind, especially because I'm not out of the woods yet. Every little bump, every little thing's going on, I'm freaking out. My doctor's sending me for scans. But a couple things happened at the Mayo Clinic. They started chemo. Found out what it's like to get chemo.
So you didn't have chemo at Lincoln?
I did have one. Okay. The first, my very first one was there because I was there 10 days.
Right.
Dave gave me one and it was scheduled for every 2 weeks. Okay. Let me tell you about this experience called chemotherapy. First of all, everybody's thinking, you know, chemo kills everything. And it does. Good stuff, bad stuff, everything. But it's getting in there and it's trying to, you know, it's scouting out the cancer as well. So they prep me. We read 10-page booklet about what to expect from chemo. And I'll talk to people and sometimes it absolutely floors them. I've talked to other people where it's not so bad. And I've talked to people that had very little side effects. So it affects everybody differently. Our body makeup, everybody's different. But let me tell you what happened the day that the morning they came in with my chemotherapy product. These two nurses walk into the room and I know I'm getting ready for my first chemo session. They have on scrubs from the top of their head to the bottom of their feet. They have on lead protecting gloves to their elbow and they're holding a bag of something they're going to put inside of my body.
Oh man.
And I'm blown away. Blown away.
Did you deny it?
Nope. Hey, if there's I'm dying. What's there to deny? You know, it's like everything they told me, I did. Yep. Let's do it. If you guys are the professionals, you know, let's do it. So I got my first session at the John C. Lincoln Hospital. 2 days after the chemo, I was still pretty good. I was actually, you know, I could tighten up my back brace, sit up, you know, walk the halls a little bit in the hospital and then go back. I was so tired from the, you know, cancer and being sick, that I'll walk down the hospital floor and back would just floor me. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of times I went into the bathroom and shaved half of my face and ran out of juice, ran out of energy and had to go lay down and then go back 2 hours later and finish shaving my face. Oh, it happened twice.
But you were going to finish shaving.
I was
going to
finish
that
shaving my
it.
Face. I was going to walk the floors. The nurses were blown away.
Mm-hmm.
A guy this sick was doing what he was doing. Do you want to? You want to hear? I shouldn't skip over this and jump right into the Mayo Clinic. I want to tell you something that was important to me.
Sure.
This is what I call my turnaround point, and this also made me think of who's in charge when you're dying like this. So when someone gets that diagnosis of cancer, and they're at home on the bed or on the couch or in a hospital or a medical room. You get this diagnosis of cancer and your head starts spinning. How bad? What's it mean? Does it mean I'm going to check out? How long am I going to be here? And everybody's afraid of death. You know, everybody's going to die, but everybody's afraid of death. So I went through that couple weeks of feeling sorry for myself. You know, everything was out of, I was not Chuck anymore. Everything was out of me. It was just a sick dude melting away, dying of cancer. So I'm laying in the bed at the hospital and I'm an old farm boy from Ohio and I wake up at 4:30 every morning with no alarm. That means I go to bed at about 8:30, 9 o'clock too. So 8:30, 9 o'clock goes by, all the lights are on in the room, the TV's on. Usually I'd wash my face, turn everything off, go to bed. Didn't wash my face. I'm laying there in the flat on my back. And I'm looking at the ceiling and I watched the clock go 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. And I'm laying there just, this is it. This is it. It's a short journey. My journey's, you know, two boys at home that I love dearly, family, friends. It's a short journey. And I'm feeling sorry for myself. And I look at the ceiling and I say, hey, God, is this a short journey or a long journey? I said, what's your plan for me? And I hear my spiritual voice that comes back to me. And most people I talk to, it's just like, you know, in their mind, you know, but I hear this clear. You've been a fighter your whole life. He said, nobody in this world has a guarantee. He said, as long as you wake up and you have a breath in your lungs, you're alive. Fight. I laid there. I'm getting chills right now. I laid there and I said, you're right. I've been a fighter my whole life. Life hasn't been easy. And as long as I'm alive, I want to smile a little bit. I want to crack a stupid joke. I want to hug my kids. So I tighten up the back brace. I sit up and I say, I'm going to go wash my face. No, this was the very first time. I didn't go to the bathroom to wash my face. I walked a lap around the hospital floor. I started pushing myself that day. That was my turnaround time. You can take that diagnosis and you can die right now. Or you can take that diagnosis and you still have breath in your lungs and you can actually still live. And I decided to live. And so I said, I'm going to walk a lap around the hospital floor. I came back, washed my face, turned off lights, went to bed. Thank God for that little piece of information. And that was my turnaround time. After that, people thought I'd lost my mind. I mean, I was at Mayo Clinic on the days that the chemo didn't kick my butt. I would sit up, slip into my hiking shoes, walk across the street. And if you know where the Mayo Clinic is, Bell Road and the freeway up there, it's in the middle of the desert. There's nothing around it. Google Scottsdale Mayo Clinic, you'll look at this building in the middle of nowhere. I walked across the street in the desert, and there was days I didn't get very far because of how I was feeling from the chemo. And there was other days where I think I might have made it out maybe a quarter or a half mile into the desert, starting to move my arms and try to get some flexibility back because of my spinal collapse, and having chats with God on the days that I could be out there. And so the chats with God ended up being the lessons that I use now in my life, in everything. Because everybody's going through life, living life. But, you know, we have adversity constantly. And it could be little, it could be big. But when there's a death in the family, when there's a divorce, when someone's business fails and they're devastated, you know, all these things happen around us. The lessons that I learned were, hey, guess what? You woke up this morning and there's breath in your lungs. Make the best out of today. And there's going to be a tomorrow, and there's going to be a next day. And we live through these things, and we you know, the pain of a divorce or losing somebody, it fades away. And now we don't ever forget them, but we can move on. So these walks with for me at the Mayo Clinic were a very important time for me. 5 weeks at the Mayo Clinic, it was insane. Moved back to Gilbert.
Hang on one sec. Okay. They thought you were crazy, but in a loving way. You were going out there and talking to yourself as far as people were concerned.
Yep.
They thought you had stepped away.
And I was real close with my mom and dad in Ohio. So I would get across the street and start getting in the desert. And the first phone call was to mom and dad. Hey, just want to say hi. Just want to hear your voice. Then after that, the talking to myself started. What's your plan for me? What's going to happen here? And I heard one morning, one of the first mornings, you wasted so much time in your life. You're going to start getting things back little by little, and you're going to focus on what you're truly passionate about in life. Made sense to me, right?
Yes. And the fact that you let your thoughts come out your mouth and go back in through your ears gave you a huge dose of clarity that we don't get when we're chattering in the side of our heads.
5 weeks. I had 5 weeks
nice.
Of that. Mm-hmm. Then back to Gilbert, Arizona. After they released me out of there. And that was a mess. My family didn't want me to go back. I just was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, 3 months to live. And I'm like, I want to get back and cook dinner for my kids. And everybody's around me like, what if you can't be here for your kids? What if something happens to you? All these things were still going through everybody's mind. You have to remember this. I wasn't just the only one going through this. It was me, my 400 Facebook friends all over Ohio, California, Arizona. It was my family. It was everybody around me watching this. I wasn't in this by myself. And that little crazy Facebook page of my buddies from around the country, the prayers started coming in. The phone calls started coming in. I mean, it was unbelievable. The drive, the made me smile, the laughs once in a while on the phone. And that little crazy Facebook page where people said, you got to read this guy's story, went to a 5,000 member Facebook page that I had to start a fan page, because at 5,000 on Facebook, you're done. You can't add anymore. Mm-hmm. And also at that time when I started seeing this growing, I said in one of my morning walks with God, hey, I don't like Facebook. It's fake. You know, everybody on there is, you know, making up stuff, and you can be anybody you want to be. And God said, well, then make it what you want it to be. So I said, okay, I will. And so my Facebook page is doctors and nurses and cancer people, survivors, people going through cancer. It's just beautiful people, spiritual healers. Hey, Chuck, I'm a spiritual healer. Hey, I need your help, because I'm talking to so many cancer patients now that I might have you call one of them or two of them or three of them. So I've created this really fun, really cool network with my social media. And that social media not only went from Facebook, but it started getting around, and I started getting calls from India, South Africa, Ireland, Australia.
No proximity too far when you're talking about...
There's no borders.
Stuff. Exactly.
There's no borders. You know, when it comes to social media and hey, you need to hear this guy's story. A doctor gave somebody in India my name and they contacted me.
Wow.
And I started working with their son that had brain cancer and he's doing better now. And it's just a beautiful thing. And then the cancer doctors in India wanted to know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called, there's a healing mechanism in your brain. And if we fight and we smile and we laugh and we love and we pray, it can be turned on and some really, really cool things can happen. And I don't say that out of sitting here making things up. I can name names and I can put other people on here that I have around the world right now going through stage 4 cancer, having chemotherapy and 2 weeks later golfing in a golf tournament, having stage 4 cancer and sending me a picture a week later of them and their wife out on a boat and a big smile on their face.
When were you cleared?
I haven't been.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, it was so bad. It was so bad. My doctor said, it's so bad, I can't stamp you in remission or say you're even cancer-free. It was so bad, according to medical books and what we know as medical people, that I would be foolish to put my name on you're cancer-free. So I have not been stamped in remission or cancer-free, even though I am riding my mountain bike again and doing mud runs with my kids and anything I want to do.
So that's like weighing yourself and judging you on how much you weigh as opposed to how your clothes feel. You don't care what it says on the paperwork. That's not where you live anymore. You are feeling you from the inside out.
Absolutely. And when they say, according to medical records, you know, first of all, you shouldn't even be here. And because of this metastasis in your bones, you shouldn't be on a mountain bike. You should be wrapping yourself in bubble wrap before you walk out the door, because any little thing, you could actually suffer fractures and end up in a nursing home and unable to take care of you and your family. And so the things that I'm doing now, it's a little hard-headed stuff, maybe old farm boy from Ohio. But when you say I can't do something, I want to do it even more.
See, and that for you, you've got to drive much stronger and deeper than a lot of people. So you do acknowledge the fact that not everyone's going to have that wherewithal to draw themselves through it with positive thought and laughing and loving.
Absolutely.
But those who do want to give it a try, what do you say?
Well, you have a choice. But with me, I didn't have a choice. It's not me. It's not my personality. You have a choice. You can stop living, or you can decide to live. That's all it is. That's really all it is.
And there's no magic to it. There's nothing that you don't have to go to any kind of a counselor.
I tell people about the juicing that I did and still do now because of my immune system. I tell them about my essential oils that I love and help the immune system. Mm-hmm. I tell them about stretching on your living room floor or doing a yoga class. I tell them about all these things. And then I'll have somebody say, well, what do you think about CBD oil? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I say, whatever works for you, do it and do it to the max. You know, overdo it. I had friends of mine that were from Ohio State, played pro football, have businesses now, calling me saying, don't overdo it. Are you kidding me? I'm alive today. I'm doing it.
Different perspective. What do you have to lose is
what
the big question.
What do you have to lose? Right, right. Exactly.
You're in a different place in your head. These guys are talking from a prevention. You're talking from a get me back to being preventive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We are almost out of time.
No, don't say
can
that. Give me another hour.
No, two hours and then some cocktails with it too.
That's right.
Okay, so this has been so fantastic.
So let me
close it up with what you want to.
Let me end this up because of this walk I've been through, because of this journey I've been through, because of these lessons I've learned in life, a lot of things have happened. I started getting little invites from maybe pastors around the country and speaking on the stage at churches. I started getting invites to speak at different cancer groups. I started getting a lot of calls from cancer people, and I get an unbelievable amount of calls. I'm talking maybe 1 to 2 to 3 a day now from around the world. So I've coached people to live. I tell the story as much as possible to give people hope, to inspire them, to kick them in the butt. I mean, you know what? It's hard to get somebody that's been diagnosed off that couch. So it might take 2, 3, 4 calls or 2 to 3, 4 months, but I can do it. Mm-hmm. Then a lot of people started saying, hey, Chuck, because of this ridiculous story, you need to write a book. And I'm like, I'm not an author. I'm a landscaper. You know, how do you write a book? I'm not an author. And it was amazing in the next couple of years, the people I met, and I say the people that God put in my path that said, well, I'm a writer. I've written books. I'm a published author. I'm an editor. I'm not kidding you. I had people put in my path and I started writing last year, and it was the most emotional year of my life because I had to recall everything. This little conversation in 1 hour is nothing compared to what's in my book. It's, you know, the whole journey in depth.
Where can people find your book?
You can go on Amazon. And if you type in my name, Chuck Keels, the last name's K-E-E-L-S, it'll pop up. The book's called Hi, I'm Chuck, because I just walk up to people daily and say, hi, I'm Chuck. And my buddy said, do you need to put that on the cover of the book? And I did. So it's Hi, I'm Chuck. And basically, you can get it on there. I also have a website. It's just my name, chuckkeels.com. And the reason why we did that is because we wanted to put some videos on there. So if you want kicked in the butt today and hear something that you're like, if this dude can do that, I can, you know, I can do this.
Challenge.
Those are on the chuckkeels.com website. And also, if you want a signed copy of the book, you can't get it through Amazon. You got to go on the website, order it. I get a little alert on my phone, and then I grab a book,
fill it out,
and drop it in the mail to you.
Oh, so you can personalize easily.
I can personalize the books.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else? What else? Where are you headed in the next 2 minutes? Tell us why you're sitting here talking about this. What is your goal?
The ultimate dream would be to, get a call from somebody in their family was diagnosed with cancer, and more than just coach them. It would be, you know, what do you mean you can't afford the medication? Well, we can afford groceries or medication. We got to decide on one. It would be to go into a situation where I have the resources to help. If it's food, if it's drugs, if it's the chemotherapy, if it's a cancer clinic, if it's more testing, if it's travel to get to a medical situation. I know what it's like to be in a situation where funds are tight and you run out of insurance. I would love to eventually be in that kind of situation where I have a network where not only I can come to coach you and make you smile through your treatment, but also to say, we're here to help. And we can help you. So I'm at the baby steps right now of building my organization and my network. I started a company called Chuck Keels Foundation, LLC. Right now, the money going into it's the books. I've gotten some donations from some churches that I've spoke at. But I want to find out, you know, what this is like to turn this into a business, because at this time, I'm spending probably 4 to 6 hours a day volunteering, working with cancer people out of my pocket.
So you want to be a philanthropist by the backing of those who can subsidize you.
And I'm hoping that maybe someone on your show will say, oh my God, I'm looking for a absolute worthy cause. Mm-hmm. And this guy, he's been through it himself. He's walked the walk. He's gone in the right direction. And this is somebody that needs the help. And that's where I'm at right now with that. I don't know what kind of doors God's going to open for me mm-hmm. in the future. I'll be in Ohio next week to do 4 speaking events.
Okay.
And then I'll be back. And I have some fun stuff that I'm starting to trickle in that I don't want to talk about until it's actually out there. But we got some pretty neat things. And one of them is actually talking to a group of the doctors at Mayo Clinic of about 150 doctors and telling them my story.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm excited about it.
And their connections. And then their connections.
Right.
We'll bring you back in 6 months.
Yes.
We'll keep going doing every 6 months to have an update on what's going on.
Absolutely.
And take us on this journey.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thanks for inviting me on. I love sharing with you guys and being here with you today. And I feel it's an absolute honor.
And those of you who are listening, as bright as his voice is, as vibrant as it is, his face is 12 times that. He's got such a sparkle in his eye and a huge smile and more than hope in your heart. You have faith in your heart, and that's what got you through a big part of this, and then you're still figuring it out the rest of the way.
And if somebody looking for help right away, jump on my fan page. It says Chuck Keels Healed by God.
On Facebook?
On Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They can find me on Facebook, but my page is at 5,000, so they can't join it. Okay. So now they're joining on to the, but if they need something right away, you go friend me on there, go through Messenger. I'm getting phone calls, I'm getting emails, and that way we can be on the phone on a conversation if you or a loved one or somebody is going through cancer and needs help right away.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, you've been spending this last wonderful hour with Naked Truth, hosted by me, Lori Corrigan, and sponsored by Snake Charmer Men's Body Waxing. And you're grinning at that, Chuck. We're going to have to get you in there to try that out now that you are reinvented. So everybody take on your day, and until next time, bye-bye.